What do you think makes somebody good at product? Is it just how much you care and how much you studied and how much you put into that craft? Is there some kind of a hidden talent or magic?
You're listening to the world's best business podcast with Stelly Efti and Heaton Shaw, who insisted on having Stelly's name mentioned first, despite him having more Twitter followers. Shut up! If you're an entrepreneur who wants to get shit done, stop everything else and focus on this podcast for the next 20 minutes. Then go back to work and crush it.
Hey guys, this is Stelly Efti and Heaton Shaw here for another Startup Chat. Heat, my man, how's it going today?
I'm great. How about you?
Wait, you're not saying I can't complain?
No, that's getting old.
It's getting old. All right. See, whenever I kind of think that I figured you out, you're switching the script on me. All right. So here
that's because you indicated on the last one that you figured me out. And I don't like that.
I don't like it
when people figure me out. It's probably a whole topic.
All right. I'll write it down as an idea to talk about. All right.
There we go.
So here's what I want to chat about today with you. What I'd love to talk about is product. And I'm curious to learn a little bit more about how you think about product philosophy. How do you approach building a new product? How do you approach keep building and improving an existing product? I know that you've thought an insane amount of time about this. I know that you've been part of creating lots and lots of product and some really iconic ones. And I know that you're currently in the phase of creating something new. And that like becoming really amazing at product is like a key priority. So I'd just love to tap your brain and learn more about it from you. Yeah, what's your thinking on how do you approach becoming better at product and how do you approach having a product point of view in the first place?
Well, the good news is my favorite product is standing right here. She happened to walk in the room. It's my daughter, and it's going to be impossible to get out of here. So if you hear any baby talk, it's her.
Oh,
so yes, that is my favorite product. So I think I have a belief. And I just try to figure out, in general, I just try to figure out, like, what's the ultimate sort of, not even ultimate, but what's the main thing that's worth focusing on? And when I think about how many products, businesses, things that people are trying to either sell or market to you today, and what makes people actually stay with something, keep something, it ends up being the experience, the product itself. Sure, the marketing has to be great. The sales can definitely be a big driver in getting growth. But at the end of the day, if the product sucks, you don't have a business. And I don't think this was necessarily true previously. Like if you go back, you know, 5 years, 10 years on the internet, especially, you didn't have the same problem as you do today with so many products out there. So much of people's attention split between all of them. So the conclusion I came to is product is what matters. And originally, I'm a marketer first, if anything. And I obviously like helping people, so I'm probably a helper more than anything else. I'm a marketer first, and I think really, really quickly I realized that within, you know, I've been doing this for internet stuff for about 12 years, and I think really quickly over the last, especially the last, I would say, 7 of them, so about 5 years in, since about 2007, 2008, I just had this realization that I just wanted to be great at product and always get better at it. And I don't think that journey is ever over. That's also another reason I like it, because things are always changing, whether it's things like mobile or now the watch or whatever. There's these new experiences that we need to create for people that nobody knows how to create because they're essentially just super new. So that's the high level of kind of, I think, the question you had. But I'd love to dive in deeper and make sure that I'm at least first answering the kind of things you're wondering about it, because I think you've always got an interesting take on it that I might not be thinking about.
So my first question is, do you remember that, was it one moment or something specific that made you think the words, I want to become really fucking awesome at product, or whatever that would probably be my choice of words, but like, when was that moment where you thought that for the first time? Do you remember? Was it some like specific moment, or was it like over a period of time and it all came together as that conclusion?
I think it was a very, very evolving realization. So we started building product by about 2004, 2005 at my consulting company. So that's easy 10 years, I can say, that we've been trying to build online products. And that's my co-founder and I. And part of it is by accident. I think he didn't care for it the way I did. And I gravitated towards wanting to build better product. So I wouldn't say it hit me like upside the head, but I think as the world has changed, And as I've seen some companies like Facebook and Apple and Amazon keep sort of getting better all the time, I always wanted to know how they did it and why we love, you know, it's partly like, why do you love the products you love? I mean, one of the things I try to think about is like, why do I like a product? Just an exercise you can do. I mean, and this is the other thing I want to say. Like, I don't think I knew anything about product, you know, more than 10, 12 years ago about how to create them. I always had experiences in childhood that actually kind of hinted at this sort of focus. For example, I had she was like my aunt. She was a family friend, but she was basically like my aunt. And I'd go to her house after school every day for 3 years of high school. And she made the most amazing food, and she really cared about it. And it literally, my taste buds are destroyed because of that. I'm very picky. I can spot like if something has a little bit of rosemary or, you know, too much salt, or like I can almost spot any flavor, and I blame her. But you know, the whole thing is like that was a product. And I think that there's all these data points for me personally going back that help me appreciate product. And I think we can all sort of learn to appreciate product, and we probably need to build something great today, build a great business. And it doesn't just have to be online products.
All right. So let's dive into this a little bit, because one interesting thing is that, you know, my personal journey was when I sold everything I had, I bought a one-way ticket to San Francisco because I wanted to start my first technology company. When I arrived, I wanted to be a product CEO. Right. I want it because I thought that's what it will take. And although I knew nothing about product, I was very hands on when it came to the development of our product. To its, you know, I don't know if it really benefited the product. Let's just say that it took me, I think, 6 or 7 years before I realized that I don't think I'm going to be an amazing product CEO. I have other strengths. I care about product. I love great products. I appreciate them. But looking at my team and looking at some of the people on my team that are truly, or one or two people that are truly amazing at product, I could just highlight their strengths and help them help our product become incredible, and then focus on my strengths and kind of make peace with that. It took me a while because I feel like in Silicon Valley, everybody wants to be amazing at product. Most people are really not. And I have my own theories why that is, but I want to ask you, what do you think makes somebody good at product? Is it just how much you care and how much you studied and how much you put into that craft? Is there some kind of a hidden talent or magic or like DNA or personality type that you think would make somebody better at it than not? Like, what makes somebody good at product in the first place? How do you know you're good at product?
Oh, man. yeah, I love the question. It is a hard question, yeah. And I didn't expect you to ask me that. So I don't think it's something you're born with.
Okay.
I know other people could argue this. I don't think it's one of those things. I think it's something you definitely consider your craft and keep working on. It's just like back in the day, is a blacksmith or a woodsmith or any of those folks, were they born with it? Yeah, sure. They might have seen, you know, it as they were growing up and learned from their family, because a lot of things get passed down through generations, but we're not in a world like that anymore. So I think you get good at what you want to get good at. And if you want to be good at product, you'll get good at it. I'm not even sure if anyone's great at it, to be honest. And one of the reasons is things just change so much. I'm not even sure if Steve Jobs himself could be considered great at it. And the reason is, if you think you're great at it, you're probably really suck at it. And so how you can know whether you're doing a good job on product is probably the best, as far as I would go, is that whoever your customers are, whoever the users of your product are, they love it. That's it. Like, and you know it when they love it. So for example, for a whole weekend, I like to tell the story, but for a whole weekend straight, about 5 or 6 meals, I made lavash bread. And this was before I knew, or not lavash bread, lavash pizza bread. This is before I knew about tortilla pizzas, but that's a whole nother topic. And so my family had to suffer through that. I don't think they suffered though, because I did what I could, but I burnt lavash. I tried lavash with beans, so it was like a Mexican pizza. I tried lavash with tomato sauce. I tried it with different cheeses. I tried with the cheese under in the bottom versus on the top, and all kinds of stuff. And then I discovered tortilla pizza, which just totally hacked my whole process. But I just wanted to get good at it. So my customers were the people eating it, including myself. And so I think that you know it when your customers love it, like straight up. And the bar is super high right now, because there's so many, there's a huge quantity of products in most markets today. And so the way you have to figure out how you stand out, and being loved by exactly who you want to use your product is the way I would gauge it.
Okay, so how do you do that? What is some practical things or frameworks of thinking that people could really take if I'm working on a product or if I want to work on the craft of becoming good at product? What are some of the tools of thinking that you're using that people could just learn from?
Yeah, I don't think you can get good at product in a vacuum. What I mean by that is if you're not thinking about the business, the market, the opportunity, and don't have a depth of understanding of all of those things, including the customer, I think inevitably you're going to just rely on your luck or your intuition alone. And so to me, the key is basically being curious about everything about your customers, everything about the products they use, everything about even their daily lives. So the depth of understanding of these people that you believe are going to use your product, which also means you have to define those people, I think that's huge. And then from there, it's all about just knowing a lot of the things about the market, the business, and having what I call a point of view. You need some kind of point of view on what the future looks like. I think otherwise you won't build a sustainable product. And B2B product and B2C product are, I really believe in the next 5 years, they're converging. But there are quite a bit different tactics when you're building a B2B product versus a B2C product.
Like, can you name some? Let's talk about some.
Sure. In my experience, a B2B product, it's much easier to either find pain or find a workflow you can improve for people. While with a B2C product, it's a hits-driven business a lot more than B2B, where you're basically trying to find a hit, and finding a hit is a lot trickier. It requires probably more work in terms of building something and getting it out there and being diligent about understanding how people feel about it. While with a B2B product, building an MVP or something is quite a bit easier, just because problems are easier to identify and workflows are very clear when you just start talking to a few people.
That makes sense. I want to go back to one thing that you earlier said, because this has been a conflict internally a lot of times when we talk about product direction, product decisions. You know, you have a one side that's all about like listening to your customers, listening to people that are your ideal customer and what they need and what they want. And then you have the whole, like, you know, if I listened to my customers, I would have given them faster horses school of thought, where it's just like, I'm going to tell my customers what they want or how they want it. And then somewhere in the middle, you have the, you need to truly understand them and their problems, but not take their solutions as prescriptions, because they don't know how to solve their own problems. Otherwise, they would, right? They need you to come up with ways. How do you think about that? The having a point of view and having an understanding and empathy and listening to what your customers telling you they want. How do you balance those two?
Yeah, let me give you an example. So a lot of us will send email in our products, and then we'll get a customer support request saying, I don't want so many emails from you. I need settings. That's like one of my favorite ones to talk about, because like just because they say they need email settings doesn't mean that you should go create email settings control how often they get email.
Yep.
So I think that's a good, very clear example where a lot of people would say, yeah, let's just add email settings because, you know, that's our number one requested thing in customer support. What I would do is I'd go find out why they want email settings. What are we doing here? You know, we're obviously sending them things and that's impacting them in some way where they're saying we want email settings. And in my case, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out why. And oftentimes you'll just learn that like they don't really want email settings. You're just sending them the wrong emails, or there's a certain type of email they really hate that you're sending them that, you know, you should just stop sending because obviously people don't like it. So without doing like what a lot of people would call, like from Toyota and Lean Startup, they call it the five whys, which is basically ask someone why five times and you'll get to the root cause of something. I definitely like doing that exercise in many cases. And so that's a very tactical example. I think on the strategic side of this question, I don't think you can get anywhere on product without having a point of view early on. Like what is it that, you know, you're trying to impact? What is the opportunity that you see in the market? And that involves talking to your future customers early, understanding how people use other products. So doing user research on competitive products, maybe just using them yourself. We did a lot of surveying to Google Analytics users. And at one point at Kissmetrics, we got about 1,000 responses on one of the surveys. And that actually helped us learn a lot about how people think about analytics, and especially Google Analytics. And so I tend to get as many data points as possible, especially early on when I know nothing. I'll just go, you know, peruse the web, you know, even type in things like Google Analytics sucks. So someone's company name sucks, and just start seeing what people think. Or I love Google Analytics, right? And then see what people are saying about it. That can already get you a pretty good pulse. And then, so I think it's really just about getting as many inputs as possible. So you can inform, you can get an informed point of view about what's the right thing. And obviously that's going to be different. Like if you and me are working in the same market, we're going to have a different point of view. And so I think that it's really important though to have a point of view and inform that point of view.
So two things. One, let me ask you, you know, there's the school of thought of like the best products come out of problems that where you solve your own problem, right? Because you have the highest, potentially the highest level of empathy because you're solving something you're intimately familiar with and you're solving it and you know your customer base because it's you. And then you try to see, can I find other people like me? So that's one school of thought. That's like the best products always come out of people trying to solve their own intimate problems. But then just like with everything in life, there's great counterexamples of people solving problems they don't have and doing it brilliantly. How do you think about that? Do you think it always needs to be a problem that you have? Do you always have to be the customer of the product? Do you think you can solve, you know, could the two of us build an amazing product for, let's say, women, right? Which we clearly are not, and do an incredible job at it. How do you think about that kind of the intimacy of solving your own problem versus solving problem for other people?
Yeah, I love that question. You kind of walked me right into it. Man, for me, the way I think about this one is like, I actually think when people try to solve a problem that they have, the challenge there is at some point you're not the customer and you're not the one you're solving for. You're solving for your customers. So you don't get practice at actually speaking to customers, talking to customers, understanding their needs. There's a worry I have with people that sort of take that approach that eventually they are not the customer, and which means they're going to lose touch of what they need to be building if they're not the ones that are using it, because eventually they're the ones building the product. They're not the ones using the product. And yes, if they are still using the product, that's great, but that doesn't mean the things that they want to add or the way they want to see it improved is the same way that a majority of the customers they have want to see it improved. So I think there's a big risk with doing it like that. Now, the alternative of doing it, building a product that's not a problem you have, I think on that one, you have to do the same thing, which is you have to get this practice and early on, get as many inputs as possible around what is the problem, how do these customers feel about it, what's the opportunity worth solving, and what's your point of view on it. So I'd say either way, you're going to need to talk to your customers and understand them like deeply. And if it happens to be you in the beginning, that's great, but that's not going to get you as far as you think.
That's awesome. All right. So let's come back to the talking to customers. So one thing that I loved and that I want to highlight from my end is that you talked about, let's get as many data points as possible. And one thing that I really want to throw into the discussion, and I know you are doing this a ton, is not just hiding behind your laptop or computer, not just hiding in your office and cave, but truly going out there and talking to people. It's great to have like an online survey and at scale, it's even more amazing. You'll learn things at a different level of scale and different data points, which is awesome. But you also just want to go out there and, you know, be in a coffee shop and pick somebody that looks like a customer and ask, hey, how are you doing this and this? Do you have this and this problem? Can I quickly show you something and have you click around with my product? And look, nothing is more powerful than the confusion of a random stranger trying to figure out what the hell it is that you've built, right? And truly like seeing people interacting with your application, truly asking them some questions and not just hearing the words, but seeing their facial expressions and the pain they're feeling, or that they're saying, yeah, this is kind of painful, but the way they're saying it, their tonality, their body language is saying, it's not really that big of a deal. Like that is super valuable. And I think too many companies, especially in Silicon Valley or especially in technology, are hiding with all the awesome, powerful tools we have with like A/B testing and landing pages and this and that and analytics and all that, and never go out there to have one-on-one conversations in the early days and doing the things that don't scale, which also bring an insane amount of just insights to the forefront. So you really want to do everything and as much as possible, right?
Absolutely. I think the amount of coverage you get in the information about your competitors, your industry, your customers is what really informs, you know, your point of view. And I see a lot of folks that actually don't spend a lot of time doing that. And it's where they go wrong, and then they have to sort of double back and figure out what they missed. This is why a lot of MVPs fail. This is actually why a lot of products fail, is they just haven't, you know, for lack of a better word, you haven't done your homework. You didn't think it was important. You thought you could just solve the problem the way you thought it needed to be solved based on your problem. And, you know, ultimately that doesn't scale. That doesn't get you customers that are not you.
Yeah. All right. Let's finish the episode off with some tips. I'll go first and then we'll finish with a tip from the one and only, the legend, Eaton Shah. So on my end, here's my tip. If you think about a product roadmap, how about having an anti-roadmap? How about not just coming up with the things you want to build in your product, but come up with a list of things you will never build in your product? Because I find that that's truly a powerful exercise to make some really hard choices. It's hard to say no to things. And I felt we've done this with Closer, and it's been always a pretty enlightening exercise. So next time you do a product roadmap, how about making an anti-roadmap as well?
Ooh, I like that. I'd revisit your anti-roadmap. That's the only thing I would add, just in case the market changes, things change.
Yeah.
So the tip I'm going to give is this idea that I see a lot of people struggling with. It applies to consumer as well as B2B. They don't actually identify what the core of their product is. So what's actually the core of it? What's the kernel? What's the product that you can start with that you can build on top of? And without understanding the problems people have and understanding the market, it's actually very, very difficult to come up with what's the right core. And core meaning like the simplest thing to build, but not just that. It's like the system that makes your product work, the things that are going to keep people engaged, or the thing that's going to get people to sign up. Whatever it is, every product has a core. And if you can understand that core earlier and what it needs to be, then you'll always be making that core better. And this goes to kind of another thing, which is as you create a product and you start growing it, your intuition, your inclination tends to be to add more features. But instead of doing that, the tip I would give you is I would stop adding features and really make everything you have better already, or kill a feature, but just do less. Do less and make it better. Make it so that there is no other product that can ever come out that can solve